Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to an episode of Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And I'm excited to have our next Lyme conqueror. And boy, did she have a long journey to get to where she even knew it was Lyme disease. So you're not the only one out there that's searching and searching for an answer that actually makes sense, right? But so much of Lyme doesn't even make sense. So it's a crazy journey we're on, but I'm excited to have her and share her journey with us. Welcome to the show, Kathy. Thank you so much for taking the time to share with me and all the listeners.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. So it's your story. Where do we start? How long ago do we go?
Oh, gosh. So just looking back, back in 2016, I started having a lot of abdominal pain, a lot of problems, and was really blowing up, swelling, lots and lots of issues going on. Did not know anything about where that would be coming from or why. Basically went to my doctor. He pushed on my abdominal area and went, uh-oh, that doesn't look so good. I want you to have a colonoscopy. So I had a colonoscopy in 2016 that came out to be positive for cancer. And I had a cancer tumor that was about the size of a softball in my intestine, my colon area. So I went in for surgery for that in 2016. They did a resection of my colon. And in doing that, fixed the cancer. Basically, I'm so blessed because that size tumor usually does outstretch already at that point and should have been out of hand, but God was good to me. And that cancer tumor was contained in that tumor and just a little bit around it. So they took a large portion of my colon, got that taken care of. I could not recover from that surgery. And my body tanked and it just kept tanking. And all these things that were abnormal to surgery were happening rapidly. And one thing after another, symptom after symptom, it was just piling on so fast. And I was tanking really, really fast. So my journey began. So in 2016, that journey began to find an answer to what in the world was going on and why was this happening. I'm someone who's always taken my health not for granted and always eaten healthy, tried to exercise, tried to keep myself in shape. This didn't match. This did not match what would happen. I couldn't get out of bed. There was all kinds of things going on. So I start searching. Wow. And my search begins.
Did the cancer really spread? Like, I have surgery and it's all good. I mean, where did your mind go to? I would think that that's where my mind would go. Okay, I was fine until this. And you say I'm cancer free now, but no, what's going on? I mean, how scary.
Well, it was quite interesting because at the time when I was told I had cancer, I just had this peace that this was not going to be my story. Cancer was not going to be my story. That wasn't going to be what really changed my life or that really made me not well. I felt like we're going to go in, we're going to take the surgery, we're going to get this stuff out, it's going to go away. Doctors already told me 98% chance I'm going to have chemo following and all this other stuff. And I told myself, okay, so no bad hair days, no bad this, whatever. I really did not have that cancer mind that most people do when they're told they have cancer. I didn't have it in me. I wasn't accepting that cancer was going to be a big problem in my life. And it turns out that it wasn't because we got those test results back from surgery. My doctor said, are you able to sit down and really understand what I'm telling you? Because I was home recovering at the time. And I said, sure. And he said, I said, right now I was on a lot of drugs for the pain. I said, right now you have me. And he said, well, I don't understand it, but we don't have to do any follow-up. You're cancer free. And I said, okay. Well, when I saw him for my follow-up, I said, if I'm cancer-free, why all of this? I didn't feel like cancer was it. So where your mind said, I wonder if, my mind didn't go there. My mind saying, what in the world happened? Why did this all happen? My body wasn't digesting food anymore. Couldn't eat, couldn't function, couldn't. We're just talking all kinds of stuff. So I'm searching. So I go from one expert doctor to another, all focusing on digestion because of that surgery. And that was the beginning of the problem, was my digestion shut down, totally shut down. Could not digest food for anything. Couldn't get it to go through my system for anything. So I went to every doctor locally. I then went all the way to the Cleveland Clinic. I'm in Indiana. I drove 6 hours away to the Cleveland Clinic, one of the most expert, you know, hospitals there could be, for them to figure this out. To hear that I am a healthy individual, look very healthy visually, at this time overweight, because I'm blowing up. So at this time I was overweight. They saw weight as the problem. And I'm telling them, no, it's not. And they're telling me that's the problem. And I'm telling them, no, it's not. And they're telling me, I must be eating because I'm gaining weight. And I'm telling them, I can't eat and digest food. I'm not eating and I'm becoming malnourished. My hair was falling out. All kinds of things were going on. They weren't focused on that. They were focused on the mechanics of my digestive system. So I went through so many tests for digestive. And I'm saying, why would this happen? Why is it that I'm feeling like something's crawling under my skin? Why is it that I'm now not able to concentrate or read a book or read my Bible? I can't take anything in and understand anything in written form. Why is that? Why is it that I have ringing in my ear and back of my head? Why is it I have pain throughout my body to such an extreme that when you touch my skin, it hurts? Why is it that my hair hurts on my head? And I kept asking all these questions of all these symptoms that continue to mount up. Why is it that my legs are turning into massive varicose veins and bruising all over my legs when I'm not doing anything? Why is it I can't get out of bed? Why is it I'm so dizzy now that I'm falling into walls? Why all these things? And they stem to look at the mechanics of my digestive system. So I swallowed a camera. I took some digestive tests 3 different times. They could not figure it out. The only thing they did find out was that I had a partially paralyzed colon. That was the result of it. Partial paralyzed colon. Treating me with medication.
And you may, right? You might have that. Still, but that doesn't explain your memory, your aches and pains, all the other stuff, right?
Right. I couldn't grip onto something because my hands hurt so bad. I couldn't grip on something to open it. I picture this, I live alone and I couldn't take care of myself very well by myself. So my daughter moved back home and lived with me for periods of time when she could around college stuff to take care of me. And she literally took charge of my life as a 50-year-old person. I'm dependent on my 20-something-year-old daughter. Not a good feeling. Not a good feeling.
I mean, granted, they are supposed to take care of us when we get older, right?
But yeah, but
when
not at
we
this
get
age.
Older from age 70, 80, 90, right? When it's normal for us to need help. So that's not a, I mean, bless her for doing that, but that's not what we want our children to do, right? At that age.
Right. And she was taking me from appointment to appointment when I couldn't drive and when I couldn't do things. She was taking me to my appointments when needed. And helping try to voice when I couldn't remember because my memory was starting to go and things were happening. But on the other hand, I could fake it. So people around me outside of my daughter didn't understand what I was really experiencing because I didn't want them to understand at this point. I just needed answers and I needed it fixed. I didn't need sympathy. I didn't need people feeling bad for me. I didn't need all of that. So I'm focused on myself and trying to find the answers, but I'm not really wanting other people to know. So I'm not telling everybody. I don't know what's going on.
We don't know what to tell them. Yeah.
I didn't even know how to put in words what I felt, to be honest.
Well, right? You know, just like, exactly. Because I, it's very much an invisible illness, I think, right? When we go outside, we appear to look normal, right? If they can only see what's going on the inside of us. And of course, you know, at my job, I had to tell the people that was going on. But I truly sounded crazy. You know, okay, I can't take phone calls today because I can't bend my arm to put the phone to my ear, right? But tomorrow, nothing's wrong with my arm. It works just fine. I mean, I sound a little crazy. I get it. So maybe that was smart on your part not to show just, the crazy signs, right? Because we do. I understand it sounds just really out there.
Yeah. Those really crazy days, I went nowhere. So I'm a real estate agent. I went nowhere. On those crazy days, I stayed home, didn't make phone calls, nothing. Because I couldn't fake it. On the days that I could fake it, I got out and I faked it. But even faking it, I could last maybe 3 or 4 hours. And it was so exhausted from the faking. Exhausted from trying to just get out. It would take me hours to get ready to go somewhere for work. And then it would take every energy in me to come back home from doing that. And I at some point in the process, I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. There was times where I couldn't fake it. I couldn't do it. 2 years after my colon surgery, in 2018, I sat down. Well, one of my friends whose husband is a doctor, he's a general surgeon in our area, sat down with me, wanted to have lunch. And I'm thinking, oh, I got a fake lunch because she doesn't know I'm sick and I can't eat. So I bought a small salad and I just shoved the lettuce around on the plate, never really eating it. And while we tried to talk, and I'm thinking, whew, I'm so exhausted. It took me all my energy to get myself dressed to get there for lunch. And I got up at 7:30 that morning because that's how long it would take me to get my brain to start waking up and try to get myself ready. And then we had lunch and she was like, what's going on with you? Something's wrong. You look great, but something's wrong. And I said, oh, I'm fine. No, you're not. What is wrong? So finally I said, you're right, I'm not. And I don't know where else to go. I've been to every doctor I know to go to. I've run out of options. I don't know what's wrong with my body, but something is wrong and they aren't listening. And I don't know what else to do. And if someone doesn't figure this out soon, I'm just going to check into a nursing home and call it done. Because I'm to that point. There's days I crawl around my house because it's more safe to crawl than it is to walk and fall into everything. And she was like, are you kidding me? I said, no. Can I tell my husband? I said, yes. So she went home and talked to him. And he called me that night, asked me to meet him the next day for dinner and not to pretend to eat, just to come and have some water.
It'd be a cheap dinner date, right?
Yeah. So I met him and I brought all my tests that I had done. And it was a very large 2-folder type thing of all the testing that had been done. And he didn't look at any of it. He quizzed me for about 2 hours straight, one question after another question after another question, listened to everything I said. And he did ask me, have you been bit by a tick? And I said, no, because I hadn't recently been bit by a tick. So he then called me back the next night and he said, I'm going to ask you a few questions and I'm going to ask them a different way. Don't think I'm crazy. I said, okay. Have you ever been bit by a tick? And I said, oh, yeah. Yeah. Not a lot, though. But there was this one tick when I was about 8 or 9 years old that got embedded in my leg. And the doctor had to come to our house after we got home from out of state where we were and remove it from my leg because he had to dig it out. And he said, I said, I had no symptoms from that. I never got sick from that. Don't know that ever mattered. He said, yeah, it did matter. I want you to read something when I send it to you. And I said, well, I can't read right now. I can't comprehend. I can read, but I can't comprehend. And he said, have your daughter read it to you. Because at the time she was staying with me. And I said, well, send it to me. I'll see if I can read it. Well, God opened my mind and I was able to read that short article that he sent me. And it was my story. And it was of a Lyme patient with my story. It matched exactly how I felt. And I called him back and said, oh my gosh, I have Lyme. This is my story. Can you just take my blood and figure out what we need to do? And he said, no, you have to get to a Lyme literate doctor. And
wow, that's incredible that a regular MD surgeon, knew about. I love hearing that because I think so many times they're, you know, just like going to become a doctor, you have, you know, like maybe a half a chapter on nutrition, you know, like to me, that's crazy. But they just, they aren't taught all these things. And, you know, however long he's been a surgeon, it really probably wasn't even a big thing. You know, now it's truly like a pandemic. And so people are learning about it, but bless him. Right. And I bless your friend for seeing right through you. I'm sure you faked it till you made it really good with a lot of people, but not your good friend. And, I'm glad that you didn't, because she saw right through you, and her husband was able to help you get that diagnosis that you probably should have had all those years ago. Wow.
Yeah. And then interesting enough, he had a friend who was an anesthesiologist that had to stop practicing anesthesia because he also just had Lyme symptoms come up, and he also went to go get diagnosed and had some problems doing that. Found a clinic close to where he lives, which is about an hour and a half from where I live, about 15 minutes from where I live, and was diagnosed with Lyme himself. Now he is a doctor within that clinic. So I asked him to, could he recommend me up there? Could he send a referral? And he said, yes. And he said he would do that right away. And I said, okay. He said, but here's the kicker. I'm looking online, and their wait time being able to see patients is about 10 to 12 months. And I said, well, in 10 to 12 months, I will already be checked into a nursing home. If I'm not too far gone at that point, get me in. And he said, well, we're going to pray about it. So literally 3 days later, I get a phone call from that clinic. And they call me and say, we don't know whose handwriting this is. We've asked everybody in the clinic, all doctors, everybody. We don't know where this handwriting came from, but we've got your name and phone number, and we don't know why. And I said, oh, I'm so desperate. I need to get in. I can't hardly function. I'm a single woman, and I can't keep having my daughter take care of me, and I need to get in. And she said, well, interesting enough, we have an appointment open tomorrow. And I said, I'm as good as there. She said, wait a minute, it's self-pay and it's not cheap. And I said, I have nothing else left to do but to take any resources I have and get my health back, or I have nothing. So I will be there. So I don't know how I did it, but I drove myself an hour and 15 minutes away to this appointment. I met with that doctor for almost 2 hours. They took lots of vials of blood, which I was already anemic. So taking a lot of blood made me a little nervous. I went to a local area there and walked around to make sure that I was good and awake and okay to drive home. And I drove home. And while I was there, he said, regardless of what these tests say, I say we treat you for Lyme. You have every symptom that matches Lyme. And we may get a negative response, but you got to be treated. So I left there with lots of herbal supplements to get my system ready for the treatment that was probably going to come. And then he called me and he said, we got the results, and the results are very clear with CDC level saying that you absolutely have Lyme. And we don't get these kind of clear results very often. So you've got very developed Lyme. So the next time we met and we started the treatment, we then started tracking all my medical history back and realized my digestive problems started when I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I was bit between 8 and 9 years old. So the Lyme started with my digestion, and it's been a problem all of my life. I just called it, I have a sensitive system. And it wasn't a sensitive system at all. It was a stupid Lyme bug in my intestine.
But how do you know, especially at a young age, right? You or your parents, like, we don't know what we don't know. And if there's just a few random things, I mean, we're all born differently, right? And things don't develop right, or we have allergies, or, you know, whatever it is, how do we know unless you just are stopped in your tracks, right? Which is what finally happened to you. And that's what got you the diagnosis.
Right. Well, so, I got at one point I had some rare fever bug, I thought it was, but it wasn't. It was fever from Lyme, but they didn't treat it that way because they didn't know that's what it was. Think back to when this is. I would have been bit in the mid-70s. If you think of my age, that would have been a mid to late 70s that I would have been bit and had started having these problems. I got this fever that my brother and sister never got. I was locked in my room, couldn't look at light, couldn't swallow food without throwing up, couldn't drink without throwing it up, was really having a hard time and just on antibiotics to get rid of this bug for a couple weeks closed into my room. And it finally went away. And then come about my eighth grade year in middle school at the time, I got this weird rash on the back of my calf. Didn't feel anything, had no symptoms, but all these purple spots on the back of my right calf, only back of my right calf. I'm like, Mom, what is this? Take me to the doctor. He's like, well, you don't have any symptoms. You're not feverish. It's not raised bumps. It's just spots. I don't know what that is, but it may always be there the rest of your life or it might go away. And they did nothing for it. When you look back now, that is a symptom of Lyme. It came out on my skin and they didn't recognize that. My digestion, like I said, was having problems in middle school, high school, all my adult life. It was a problem and never figured out that that's where it was coming from. It's you just go back and you want to, on the other hand, now I've got my answers to what all those things were.
Yeah.
And I was so fortunate to have that doctor and that doctor's wife friend that was able to get me to the right place at the right time to start treatment. And the treatments began. And it was a long course, long, hard course, but
wow,
it's over.
Wow. Yeah. It really is. And I hear it so often about, you know, just growing up and people have random things, you know, and we can't blame anyone. I mean, we certainly can't blame ourselves. We can't blame our parents because most of the time they take us to the doctor. The doctor says it's okay. I mean, so where do we put the blame, right? And does it really do us any good? But that's just crazy how so many times we track it back and we're like, oh, okay, now it all makes sense.
Right.
All right. So you get this diagnosis with, yes, I agree. Not very many people have a CDC positive Lyme test, right? And that's part of our problem, part of our testing problem, part of the CDC guidelines, because I was not CDC positive, but I guarantee you that I had Lyme disease, right? Like it was not in my head. I treated Lyme. I got well. But yeah, there's just so many misconceptions out there that we don't know. And one of the big thing is that even if years ago, somebody would have said, you know, well, maybe it's Lyme. If you just take a regular standard test through your doctors, it's probably going to show negative, right? And so then in our head, we're like, okay, I for sure don't have Lyme, but we don't know that the testing isn't accurate. Right. Unless we talk about it like we're doing here today. Right. We're educating people and sharing information that we all had to learn the hard way. All right. So you get your diagnosis. You had initially been sent home with a bunch of herbals and stuff to kind of boost your body and get ready to treat Lyme because he was pretty sure now we're going to treat it. So what did your treatment protocol look like?
So we knew I had that sensitive digestive system. So that was one big concern. And I never took medication throughout my life. I only took it when I needed it. I wasn't one to take an aspirin or a Tylenol or anything. When I had a headache, I just got through it. So my system's super, super sensitive because it just really, number one, I think Lyme makes it sensitive in one sense. But another, when you don't take medicine regularly, then your body's going to take that in and make it work wholeheartedly, right? And we knew that. So we went in with just slowly ramping up some antibiotics with those herbals, and we kept changing the herbals a little bit because some of the herbals work like antibiotics. They're not just herbals, but they're herbals to work like antibiotics. So I'm taking herbals to support the system. I'm taking herbals that work like antibiotics, and then I'm taking antibiotics all orally at the time. We went through several different courses of that before we realized we can't put this in my stomach and be able to absorb it. My body is not reacting well to it, and it's destroying my gut. My gut was already diseased. Now it's destroying it worse. So at that point, we start shots. And I take shots in the hips, really painful shots in the hips on a very regular basis, like twice a week. And I'm supporting.
And what were these shots?
Lots of different antibiotics throughout the process, different ones.
Okay, so no more pill form of antibiotics, so it doesn't have to go through your digestive tract. So now you're getting just injections, basically, of antibiotics.
And lots of herbals. So between that and the herbals that we were okay with taking into my system, that was my treatment plan. And we did that for quite some time. About 2 years later, we saw some improvement.
I have a question. Sorry, can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
Okay, so just like what you said, right? We do antibiotics and it doesn't just kill the bad bacteria. Kills are good stuff, right? And that's one of the things I struggle with when people with chronic Lyme want to start with antibiotics, because it's not going to work, right? Like you get a fresh bite, absolutely get on them antibiotics for 6 to 8 weeks. And hopefully that's the end of your story. But when you're chronic, I just don't ever think that it's the great first choice. And that is why, because it can do a lot more damage than does good. So now taking away the pill form of antibiotics, and this may be a silly question, right? We're all learning together. The injection of the antibiotics, does it still mess up your gut?
My gut was a mess regardless. It didn't make it worse.
Your body didn't have to digest it through your already messed up digestive system. Okay.
Right.
Because I'm thinking that, and now that I just said that, it was kind of a silly question, because even IV antibiotics, I know that those wreak havoc on your gut. So yeah, of course a shot would too. Okay. I answered my own question, I think. Had to walk through that for a second.
Yeah. It's still going to mess it up. And my gut was a mess no matter what. So 2 years into it, I'm having digestive problems still big time, but my brain is better. Okay. I'm having less foggy brain. My ringing in my ear in the back of my head, that kind of faded away. The joint pain and the muscle pain and the body pain was lessened. So we felt like we were on the right track, and maybe what I was feeling was malnourishment. So at that point I go back to Cleveland Clinic and I start working with them about my digestion again. I'm working with functional medicine at this point. I'm not working with just the digestive doctors. I'm working with the functional medicine part of Cleveland Clinic. So they think a little more outside the box.
Okay. And good to know.
They do understand Lyme and they do somewhat believe in it, whereas all the medical doctors did not. These people actually did believe in it, but said they could not treat for it. That wasn't something that they treated for at all. So they focused on my digestion. We did the elimination diet in order to figure out, was there something that I was trying to ingest that my body was actually allergic to and I didn't know it. We found out I was allergic to corn. We found out I was allergic to sulfur in foods. Yeah. And I was already, I'm a celiac as well, so I was already on a gluten-free diet. Since the cancer diagnosis, I stopped all refined sugar at that point. And the only sugars that I would get would be natural fruit sugars, some stevia, some monk fruit. That's about it. If I had anything that I wanted sweet, that's how I had it. But most of everything that I did, I liquefied to try to get into my system. A lot of things that I did, or it was soft foods. I could not do anything that my body had to break down. I couldn't get it through. And I was on Amitiza and Linzess, the highest doses you could be on the market. And now for years, it's years that I'm on that. You're not supposed to stay on that medicine more than a few months. I'm fighting insurance every day to pay for this medicine that's thousands of dollars just to get the food to go through. And I kept saying, every time the insurance would deny it, I'd call and appeal and say, do you want this problem? Because you can have it. I don't like this problem. You can have it. I was they still focused on something's not adding up. If you're not eating, why aren't you skinnier? So picture the fact that at this point, at my heaviest weight, was the heaviest I've ever been in my life. Looked very out of shape, very swollen. My heaviest weight was 206 pounds. By the time we figured out and I started fixing my digestion in the late stages of all this treatment, I was down to 141 pounds. So wow. I went from 210 to 141 pounds. And wow.
And you were probably eating more, right? You're eating more because your body, you're able to digest the body and you're losing yeah. weight.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I won't talk about weight now, but I will say if you can take that visual of what that did, when I was out and around some, occasionally get out and around some, people that I knew or people that knew of me would come to me and say, "What are you doing? What's your trick? Oh my gosh, you look so great." And I would get so offended because they didn't know how miserable I was. And I finally started saying to people, you should ask people if they're losing weight, are they intentionally losing weight? Because if they are, congratulate them for that. But if they say they're not intentionally losing weight, then console them and ask them what you can do to help. Because
right.
our world is so screwed up that we look at someone and if they're actually a thinner weight, we think they're healthy. I was so unhealthy. I was in my most unhealthy part of my life and I'm being complimented on how great I looked. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. So
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, I hear you. Yeah. Many of us, I think, lose all this weight and look so amazing quickly because something is wrong with us, right? That's yeah. not normally the way we just generally lose weight for sure.
Ugh. Yeah. I'm like, if you could eat, I mean, be glad that you can eat food is what I would tell people. Be glad you can eat food because I can't eat food. There's not much I can actually put in my system and eat. So anyway, I worked with Cleveland Clinic for about a year and a half. I'm off of Lyme treatment at this time because we don't think it's the Lyme. We think it's the digestion. I'm becoming more and more and more malnourished at one point I start actually doing slightly better. So I'm starting to have a little less pain in my gut. My joint pain's getting a little bit better again. So we're thinking we're on the right track. And then one day we changed some supplements. And when we did, it all came back. So I said, whoa, 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 to the doctor in Cleveland. Wait, 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 wait. I don't know what we did.
But reverse. We did, rewind.
Get that back out of there. And she said, call your Lyme doctor. This is not about nutrition. I'm afraid your Lyme has reacted. And I said, oh, no, no, no. I can't go back to that. So I go back to my Lyme doctor and I tell him. And he thinks that they're just poo-pooing me off because they can't fix me. Because he doesn't believe by looking at me and talking to me, and I'm more cognizant than I was before, that it's actually Lyme getting worse. So he takes some blood, sends it to Germany, to the lab in Germany, and has it studied. And they run not just the test to see where my numbers for Lyme will say is, but they're also running that genetic test that Germany has started to do to see the four or five factors of how fast it comes back, how well you can control it, whatever, all those different factors that they do. And he called me back and he said, oh my gosh, did we think your numbers were convincing to the CDC before? Your numbers have tripled. And I said, what? He said, your numbers have tripled. They're off the chart. And I said, oh no, 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 that can't happen. He goes, I don't understand how you're functioning. Because you're functioning with tripled numbers. I don't get that. And I said, well, I'm not functioning great, but I'm functioning better than when you first saw me, but still not great. I still don't have any quality of life. I still don't have quality of life back. And then he said with the genetics from Germany, he started explaining the four factors that they were looking at the time. And he said, all the patients that we see in the clinic, we've been doing this test on, I also sent my own, and most patients, when they come back, one or two of those four factors are positive, but not more than two usually. A lot of people, zero or one, but not more than two usually. All four of yours are positive. That means this is the hardest to control, the hardest to get under control, the hardest to stay in remission if we get it there. Just to FYI, that's what we're facing. And I just
and
laughed.
This is just all, everything was good until you just switched up a couple herbals.
Not totally boom. Good, but it was getting better. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it was just basically, I think my body was doing this. My immune system was trying and so it was fighting it some, and then it gave out again. I mean, that's what I feel like. It was under that fight, it camouflaged the fact that I'm still in a big fight because I was feeling better. I'm telling myself mentally, I am so much better because I can walk around without falling into a wall and I can drive my car safely now. And I can, you know, so I'm telling myself, I think I convinced myself somewhat that I was probably better than I was because I was so bad before and I'm marginally better. So I'm telling myself I'm really better when I was probably just marginally better, to be honest.
I can relate to that, you know, because I was 3 years into treatment, and looking back, I thought, gosh, I'm almost there, you know, like I can drive and talk and meet a girlfriend for lunch and all that. And then I had that traumatic event where the town I lived in burned down and I had to drive through the fire for 5 hours, and all of that reignited my Lyme. And then 3 more years of treatment. But now looking back, oh no, I was not even half as close as I thought I was. Yeah. We don't know, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're so desperate for that positive and you get that positive. So what do? I think we just blow it up to something better than what it really is. And that's okay. But I think that's what really happened to me. And so he said, we're back on treatment. We got to hit this hard and fast because you're out of control. You are so out of control. And we've got to hit this hard and fast. And I said, okay. So at that point, we decided to put a PICC line in and do IV antibiotics and more supplements. So the picture of the supplement swallow pill regime that I did was 5 times a day. I'm swallowing pills in the numbers of up to 50 pills a day.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm taking an IV at my home through a PICC line where a nurse would come in to first make sure all was good at the beginning of the week. And then I would do it daily myself. And then she would come in at the end of the week and make sure all was good. So she came in twice a week. I hooked up myself twice a day. And I'm taking IV antibiotics twice a day. And the number of hours to just do that was 6 hours a day. So my life was making my own food because I can't eat anything pre-prepared. All has to be fresh. On a very confined diet because I can't digest anyway, not eating very well anyway, but I have to get some food on my stomach because I'm taking all these harsh medicines in.
Right.
And my whole day was consumed in nothing but trying to get my health back. I would try to make a phone call and try to pick up some work here and there because I needed the money, but it was really, really challenging. And occasionally if I went out for an appointment, it was all I could do. And I was trying to do it between appointments and hide my PICC line because I didn't want my customers to think I wasn't capable. Right.
Yeah. We got to fake it. Keep faking it.
And interesting enough, I couldn't tell you my name at times. There were a lot of times I couldn't figure out how to get home. I would put on my GPS, get me home. And I would be sitting and crying in my car because I didn't know how to get home and I didn't know my name. But I could handle a real estate transaction and not miss a beat. I don't know how that happened.
That muscle memory in our brain, right? Which it should be. But gosh, that was my story to a T too, was I got lost and called my mom crying. Where am I going? And I didn't know my name. And then that was my final straw.
I just kept telling family members I'm forgetting things and I'm losing it. And I would get a little irritable every time I would see that I would forget something or where did I put something? I don't even know where it is or whatever. I would get a little bit irritable, and that is not my personality at all. But when I would try to bring up, you know, like I went downstairs to the basement and I forgot. Well, that happens to me all the time. It's just age. No, this is different. It's a different feeling. No, you're just making bigger of it than what it is. That's what I would hear.
You're being so dramatic, Kathy.
Yeah. And I'm saying to them, I'm feeling like a beginning of Alzheimer's or something because I'm feeling like I'm really losing it. And they're like, no, you're not losing it. We don't see it happening. You're fine. very supportive, but not understanding, right? And it's hard to put those words together to describe that. No, I feel it being different. It's different.
Well, there's that phrase, you don't get it till you get it.
Right.
You just don't, you know, even the best of the Lyme doctors, they'll flat out tell you, like, I just have to believe what you're saying because I can't understand it. You know, they just don't get it.
Yeah. That's where I feel like I was so blessed because I had this Lyme doctor who has Lyme.
Yeah.
So when I went in and I said to him, I feel different in the head. He's like, what's that mean? And I said, I don't know. Like, fluffy, like big feeling, like not swollen, like I have a headache, but like swollen feeling, inflamed type. And he was
and that probably all made sense to him. Whereas
he goes, you're exactly right. But if I would have told a regular doctor that, they don't get it because they don't feel it. They don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, you're right. Your brain's probably swelling. And I'm like, well, that's what it feels like, but it doesn't have the pressure you would think that you would have and massive headaches. I got headaches, but not at this point. It was the foggy brain and the lack of concentration, but I felt that inflammation in my brain. I felt it. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, and every so often, is it weird that I feel something crawling? Like I feel things crawling in different parts of my body. He's like, no, it really isn't. It really isn't strange. Mm-hmm. And you probably are feeling those bugs in there. And I'm like, no, don't tell me that's gross. That's just gross. I don't even think about that.
That's hard to get that out of our head, right? Hard to hear those words. Yeah, for sure.
Nasty. Yeah. So I did IV antibiotics with a PICC line. Until my skin decided that it didn't like the glue of the bandages on my arm. My skin has become very, very, very sensitive and it blistered fast and we had to remove the PICC line pretty quick. And then I had basically no skin left on my arm from the whole patch of where that PICC line was. So we had to take a break, take just the herbals, revamp the system a little bit. And then I went into surgery and had a port put in my chest. So an IV port put in my chest. So I still to this day have that port. I'm 8 months into remission, but the port hasn't been removed just because I haven't wanted to go into surgery to disrupt my system enough to have it taken out.
It is a scary thought, right? I mean, it is. I think that any type of physical or emotional trauma to our body is what can trigger it, right? And spiral us. And it's that fear of it, you know, it really is that like the PTSD from it.
Absolutely.
I think that if we continue to keep a strong foundation, right? Mm-hmm. Keep it a strong immune system, strong foundation, great diet, all the things that there's nothing for the pathogens to want to come after, right? There's nowhere for them to sneak in. And so you'll get there. I think in time, right? Everything is timing. But right now that is not bothering anyone, right?
Right. I mean, for months after I got into remission, I continued to go to my local hospital for them to flush it and take care of it. And I still took the heparin through it and all that, so it would stay open. So if I by chance had a flare, I wouldn't have to go through a process to get something working and I wouldn't have to be stuck so many times. That was it's a painful thing because I never got calloused around the port. And so I always had to use lidocaine cream to actually numb it, to actually access it, because it's extremely painful to poke it. But I still went in and had them do all of that once a month until just about 3 months ago. I stopped going and just decided enough is enough. But I did that because that, you know, voice in the back of my head where the doctor's telling me the genetics of the Lyme that's in me is not one that we can control. It's one that once you get in remission, it's going to come back pretty quick and harsh again. So that was in my head. Yes, I hit it in remission, but at what point does it come back? And I'm to that point here 8 months later where I claim that it's not. And if it does, it's not going to be that. It's not going to be so horrific. I know how to control this now. I know that there's things that I responded well to in treatments. I know what doctors to go to help me get there. I don't have to wait for it to get so out of control that it's hard to get back. So I'm not scared of it anymore. I went through a good ways of being scared of that. Yeah. I did.
And I think that's natural. Yeah. It's completely natural. We go through so many years of, it's a very traumatic thing to go through, and we don't ever want to relive it, right? And so, I mean, I've had people on the show where they kind of live in a bubble. You know, they don't want to go outside. They don't want to go hiking. Mm-hmm. They don't. So it really is a real thing. And that's why I say that the healing journey is so much more than just killing and detoxing. It's this emotional part of it too, right?
Right.
It's almost like a grieving process, grieving all the things we lost. And we have to go in it. Our mindset is so, so huge.
Right.
Whether you have Lyme or not, right? Our mindset is huge in life. And you have to go with that mindset that, okay, this journey taught me I'm so in tune with my body. It will give me a sign, right? That something is off. Not that Lyme is back, but something is off maybe that's going to weaken my body where the pathogens might want to come in. You're going to listen to that sign. Right. And you're going to respond to it. And then just like you said, you've gained all these tools in your toolbox now that you don't need to fear it. Right. We don't want it, but don't fear it, because you learned so much along your journey that if it happens, one, I'm going to listen to my body. Right. It's not just going to be, oh, I'm getting old, or oh, I have that aches and pains, or oh, I have this. Right. We know our bodies. We get so in touch with our bodies. And then you have the tools. You know what to do yourself at home with the doctors that you trust. And so good for you. I'm very proud of you for getting over that very hard emotional hurdle of this.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It makes sense. Don't judge yourself that you were questioning, right? It's it's very normal. And I'm just happy that you got over it, because you deserve it. You had a long journey and a rough one.
Long, hard journey. And when we did everything that we could do, given the United States and all the medicines that we can take in the United States, and none of it got me to remission. And I would get better, and then I would fall back, and then I'd get better, and then I'd fall backwards. And every time we took a break to see how the body was doing without medicine, I would go backwards. And so we knew I couldn't stay on these medicines the rest of my life. That's not going to work. So my doctor gave me a recommendation of a clinic out of the country to go to for specialized treatment for people with Lyme disease. And of course, I asked him, if you were in my position, would you go? And he said, you know, this is your only choice. You don't have any, we can't keep doing this. And my hands are tied in the United States. There's nothing more I can do. We can continue to try the medicines again and see if your body, you know, go back through all the regimes that we tried and see if your body reacts in a more positive way. But I'm afraid to continue to go down that path for a lot longer. If we need to do that for a while longer, that's fine. So I chose to go out of the country, went to this treatment program. They did all kinds of things. It was horrific. It was more horrific than doing all the IV antibiotics that were already horrific enough. But it was horrific. It was hard. But with those combinations of what I already did to my body here, I believe in the United States, and then what I did out of the country and the types of things they're able to do because they're not bound by our governmental restrictions, that combination allowed me to get into remission. I believe it was a combination of my willingness to be open, my willingness to let them do what needed to be done with my guidance of verbally telling them when I couldn't do more. They listened to me well there. But also, you know, I was empowered. I empowered myself to be able to speak up when I needed to speak up, ask questions a lot, make my own decisions for what I felt was right for my body, tell them when I thought they were off track in the United States, out of the United States, whatever, and focusing on diet. And I'm telling you right now, the one thing that I never got good counsel on, no matter where I was in this world, was unless I asked, what kinds of things should we be consuming and not consuming in our body for our food? I was concentrated not because of my digestion, but honestly, every person with chronic illness needs to see what they're putting in their body and be conscious of that, because that's our fuel. It's not about the pleasure of food. It's about the fuel we need. And if you don't have the right fuel, you're not going to go, that tank's not going to go very long. So yes. I really focused on I did what I could, which was dietary. And I let them do all the other scientific stuff to me. But I did what I could. And to this day, I don't eat outside of my house very well, because I'm so concentrated on what I want to go into my body. And I don't know what ingredients they use. And
it's
now
scary.
I do have allergies to things that people don't normally have allergies to. And guess what? That's our body reacting, a histamine reaction to things being out of balance. And now that I'm getting in balance and I'm healthy, I don't want to make that off kilter and allow those things to come back in and attack my body again. As long as I stay healthy in my diet and exercise, sleep, lower the stress with grounding techniques, all these detox the body on a regular basis. If I keep doing these, then I'm doing the best I can to keep it from coming back and getting me again. Right. And it's still in me.
Yep. Nope. And that's how you're going to win for the long haul, for sure. And yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because diet is huge. And even, you know, we could think that we're eating healthy at home, but our food is toxic, you know.
Toxic.
I'm hoping that there's a lot of changes coming in the pipeline right now when it comes to around our food and the different dyes and GMOs and all that stuff. But we got to be careful even at home. So going to a restaurant, it is very scary. Okay, Kathy, I got to ask you just real quick, what types of crazy treatments did you do out of the country? What types of treatments were they?
So I did a lot of antibiotics still through the IV. Some of the same as what we did here, some of the same, but some different ones. I also did methane blue. I also did, hyperthermia. I did several treatments of hyperthermia. That was one of the game changers for me. I am always cold. So heat intolerance is not something I experience that I know a lot of Lyme patients do, but for me, I'm always cold. My hands and feet are always cold. So to warm me up on a cot was not scary thought to me. I thought, oh, good, let's warm up, because I'm always cold. But it was
hyperthermia was my biggest ticket as well.
It helped. It helped a lot. And where I was out of the country, I could get fresh coconut juice. So following those treatments, drank fresh coconut juice right out of the green coconut for electrolytes to get back in my body. But honestly, all my life since 8 years old, I can tell you, I've never could sweat. I played sports in middle school and high school. I never could sweat. This was the game changer for me. When I went into that hyperthermia, the first one I came out of, I was soaked in sweat. As the first time I've ever experienced that in my life. I've been very hot, and you get outside and you get really hot, but I get overheated because I can't sweat. The most I got was tacky. I get a little tacky. This, I was soaked. From then on, I have sweat like no tomorrow, and it feels so good to sweat, even though it's gross.
Amazing.
It's a game changer for someone who never sweats.
It's one of our biggest detox pathways. To sweat. When you did your hyperthermia, were you awake, or did they put you to sleep?
Oh no, awake.
You were awake. Okay.
Absolutely. Yep. They keep you awake, and they listen to you. So the times that I would say, oh, I'm getting pretty hot, I'm not so sure we can go any higher, he would say, I'm looking at all your vitals. Your vitals are good. Don't panic on me. I'm like, I'm not panicked. I'm just getting a little bit on the hot side. And he would say, I think we can go just a little more, but we're not going to go extreme. They never went to a major extreme. I think the hottest, I think the first time I went in, my temperature got to 101. My normal body temperature is 96.8 instead of 98.6. It's 96.8. So whenever I got a fever of even 99, I always felt like I was dying. Okay. So at 101, it was pretty hot for me, but it worked well. And I think the last treatment that I did, I think I got to, I think between 102 and 103, and they never really wanted me to go any higher than that. But they held me at that temperature for 45 minutes before they cooled my body back down to my normal temperature. So it was a process to slowly get me there and slow, and then hold me and slowly bring me back. Beyond that, I did ozone treatments. I did coffee enema. I couldn't do the coffee enema anymore because it gave me a buzz because I don't do caffeine. And so that was a big problem. So then I did a soapy enema. Only had to do that once. And honestly, when I went to the, out of the country and they started doing all this stuff to me, I was still on my digestive medicine, the Linzess and the Amitiza. Within about a week and a half of being there, I went off of it. And from then on, I've not needed it. My digestion system is now working. It's been working normally for me, as normal as you can be. I still obviously have a sluggish colon, but it, I don't believe it's partially paralyzed like what they said. I believe it's working because I don't need anything to digest through normally. I mean, we'll just be real gross about it and let you know that all my life, it was normal for me to go easy 2 weeks without having a bowel movement. And now I have a bowel movement every single day. So that's the difference. That's such a humongo difference for the detox reasons more than anything. But I did that. I did red light therapy. They put like a helmet on my head with red light. And that was just concentrate on the brain only. I did, like I said, ozone through the nose, through the ears, through the blood. I did plasmapheresis. That was another huge game changer that was very painful to do. I really thought I was dying when I had that done, but it was the biggest, quickest clean out of any detox that I ever experienced. And that's why it was so hard. It was hard.
Right.
I did lymphatic massages. I did, we put clay mud on my liver, on my back and on my stomach and all around, held that on. I did biomat treatments daily.
Love this, my biomat. Gosh, it biomat. Sounds so, it literally sounds almost like the clinic that I went to in the States that you did. And and you don't hear often that people do the hyperthermia treatment. And every guest I've had on in the past that did hyperthermia, they were put to sleep versus staying awake. And I stayed awake. And so it's just interesting to hear that you did as well. Well, you know, and I think along all of our journeys, so many things can get us a certain point, right?
Right.
And then there's something that is the total game changer. And I'm so happy that you took that leap of faith and went to the clinic and let it be that game changer. And then even all the digestive stuff in your colon, you think is back. That's just incredible. And so well earned, right? You had a long journey with this and well deserved. So Kathy, what a journey. I'm so, so happy for you. And truly, thank you for sharing your story and being vulnerable. And, you know, just like the leaving the pick thing in your heart, you know, it's a little bit of PTSD. And sometimes reliving this journey might take us down that road too. But a lot of times it's very almost like that final healing piece. And so I hope it was healing for you to share with us, and just know that I appreciate you and I appreciate you sharing the voice with me and for all the others that are too sick to share their voice. So I appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed
a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.